Well, Katav, welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. We are now at the beginning of the 11th parak of Masachek Tubot, Hadaf Tzadi Hei Amud Bet, Almana Nizonet. We have a very brief Mishnah Aleph. Almana Nizonet Minichse Yitomim. This is something that we've already seen before in the text. An Almana is fed from the estate, by the estate. We will see in a moment a slight question or problem with the second word in the Mishnah. And in a response, as it were, the wages that she earns, the almana earns, go to the heirs. But they are not chayav to see to her burial. Who is? Yorsheha, yorshei ktuvata. Those heirs of hers who inherit her ktubah. And in an earlier parak we saw that the way that we interpreted this awkward phrase, Yorsheha, Yorshei Ktuvata, made an oblique reference to a Shomeret Yavam who has two sets of Yorshim, her husband's family and her father's family. In any case, Chayvin Mikvurata, that is the family, those are the people who are required to see to her burial. Now, to preface the first comment to the Gemara, it's important to note that common perception holds that the Mishnah was committed to writing by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and that there were written texts available that people were referring to. Such is absolutely not the case. And the Mishnah was not committed to writing until hundreds of years later. And the best evidence for that is the fact that throughout the Gemara, from time to time, questions are raised as to the proper reading of the text of the Mishnah, and recourse is always given to either proving it reasonably by context, or recourse to a particular Tana being more reliable than another. However, the simplest solution, which is Nete Sefer Venechze, let's bring the Sefer and see what it says, is never used because the Mishnah continued to be an oral presentation and an oral body of information. So what was it that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi accomplished? He accomplished much. He winnowed out all of the halachot, and in each halacha found the one that represented consensus and was most concise. And second of all, he organized, which is a huge endeavor, organized the entire body of Jewish law into the six sedarim, and from there on, within the taxonomy of organization. In any case, the Gemara opens up and asks, Ibayalahu, nizonetnan o hanizonetnan? How do we read our Mishnah? Almana nizonet, which is prescriptive or normative, an almana is fed, or almana hanizonet, meaning an almana who is being fed, in which it's a conditional statement. If an almana is being fed, then the wages go to the heirs. But an almana is not automatically fed by the estate, and that would depend on the machloket that we had between Anshei Galil and Anshei Yehuda back in the fourth parak, as to what the conditions of the almana are. Is it that the almana remains on the property, as Anshei Galil say, until she decides to leave? She decides to marry or collect her ktubah and leave, in which case she is in the driver's seat. Or is it that the heirs keep her on the estate until they are willing to pay off the ktubah? They are in control, and when they decide that they want her off the estate, they pay her the ktubah and she leaves. So let's see. Nizonet na anuch Anshei Galil, v'losagre lo yahavula. Do we read nizonet? Normative, and it follows on Shei Galil that they must feed her. Odilma hanizonet, or perhaps it's conditional, an almana who is being fed, kan Shei Yehuda. Following on Shei Yehuda, de'ivei bo lo yahavula. And if they want to, they don't have to feed her, they can pay her the ktubah. So which is it? Toshma, Rabbi Zera, or Shmuel, mitziat almana le'atzma. Shmuel stated a rule that it seems to be associated, and in some sense an extension of our Mishnah, which is if an almana finds something, she gets to keep it, and it doesn't go to the heirs. Now, our assumption at this point is that any relationship that would necessitate giving wages over to someone else, as in a baal, would automatically bring with it the same thing with a mitziah. So if we understand that our Mishnah's ruling is hanizonet and the halacha follows on Shei Yehuda, and they don't have to feed her shapir, then I understand we're talking about an almana who does not have the same security as a married woman, and therefore she keeps the mitziah. But if we read it as normative, then nehavu kabal. Why aren't the heirs standing in the place of the husband? Because they're feeding her. Mabal mitziati shalabala achanami mitziati shaliyorshim. Just like a husband gets the mitziah of his wife, similarly, the heirs should get the mitziyah of the almanah. So it seems to support the reading in our Mishnah, which is not the reading we have, hanizonet, and it is referring to an almanah who happens to be fed at the whim of the yorshim. No, li'olamim elacha nizonet nan. I'm going to go back to the read that we have, which is almanah nizonet, it's normative. And why then would Shmuel rule that she gets to keep a mitziyah? The answer is that mitziyah and maaseh adayim don't come from the same position. Meaning, the reason that a woman's maaseh adayim goes to her husband is not the same reason that the mitziyah goes. Why do her maaseh adayim go to her husband? Because he's feeding her. Tama mayam rabban mitziyah tishalabala. But why did the rabbi say that the mitziyah goes to the husband? To lo tehavi la'aiva. We don't want to create a lack of shalom bayit in the house. The husband's going to start feeling resentful the fact that he is feeding her. In the meantime, she found something nice and she gets to keep it. So we want to prevent that. Hani tabuleva, but if it's a question of the heirs, what do we don't care about that. We're not concerned with the great harmony between them. And therefore, she should be able to keep it as a normal case where a person finds something. If they're an adult, they get to keep it. Mitziyat adam le'at smoke. Good, so Shmuel's ruling about Mitziyat Almanah does not prove anything about our reading, and we fall back on, as it's indicated in the fourth parak, the halacha following Anshei Galil, which is that they do have to feed her until she decides to leave. I'm Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Now, parenthetically, kol melachot she'isha osa lebaala, all of those melachot that we listed in the fifth parak, that a woman has to do for her husband, milling the flour, and of baking, and of cooking, and doing laundry, etc., etc. Almanah osal yorshim. Those same melachot have to be done by an almanah for the yorshim, because after all, they are taking care of her mezonot. In response, she does have to do those melachot, including earning, which is with the spinning the wool that we described. Chutz me, there's three exceptions, mizigatakos, pouring wine, Vatsatamita, making their beds, Vachatsat Panavya Davraglavin, washing them, because these are all acts not of work, but rather of intimacy, which is why the halacha is that Kolha Malachot Shaisha Usala Ba'ala, Nida Usala Ba'ala. All of these malachot that we listed, a woman does even when she's in Nida, except for those three, because they are associated with intimacy. Same thing with an almana. Now, as a parallel, I remember Shuman Levi, kol malachot sheha'eved osel rabo. Any malachot that a slave does for his master, talmid osel rabo. A student should do for his master, his teacher. Chutz mihatarat minal, except for one, which was sounds to us very simple, but considering the kind of footwear that they had then was not, which is undoing his shoes. They used to wear sandals that would have straps that would go up, and undoing them was a bit of a job, and therefore a slave doing that, but you could see even physically that it was really an act of subservience. And the concern here is that if an outsider would see this guy taking off an older person or another person's shoes, they would assume he's an eved, and then let him try to get married, let him try to claim property or anything as an eved. So we make sure that the Talmud doesn't do that. So I'm a Rav Alom Ranel of Malkom Shein Makirin Oto. Rav said that's only true in a place where nobody knows this guy. Of Malkom Shein Makirin Oto Leitlan Ba. If everybody knows him and they know who he is, they know he's a Talmud, and they see what he's doing is an act of reverence and support for his Rebbe, and not an act of slavery, then it's okay. I'm Rav Ashi, Malkom Shein Makirin Oto Nami. Rav Ashi added, even in a place where they don't know who he is, you could still do that. Lomran Elad Lomanach Tefillin. That's only true if the Talmud is not wearing Tefillin. If you remember from an earlier sugya, if an Eved puts on tefillin in the presence of his master, that may imply consent of the master to free the slave. Because putting on tefillin is something that an Eved's not chayivin. And putting on tefillin is almost a statement of independence. And therefore, if this Talmud is wearing tefillin, he could even undo his master's shoes, his Rebbe's shoes, and nobody would consider him to be an Eved, and therefore it would not be a problem. Monach tefillin leitlan ba. Good. Back to just one more piece on the issue of serving your teacher. The response that many teachers would have in a case like this is, I don't want my Talmud to behave like that. I'll treat him like an equal. Okay, he'll sit at my feet. Okay, I'll teach him and he'll listen. But as far as serving, I don't want him to serve me. A person could think that. I'm a Rabbi Rav Chiya Bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Any Rebbe who does not allow his student to serve him, as if he's keeping kindness from him. In other words, my Rebbe allowing his student to serve him is an act of chesed towards the student. And we have a pasuk in Iov, the one pasuk on the page, Shenemar lamas me're'ehu chesed, keeping chesed from your friend. How do you keep chesed from another person? You cannot do chesed for another person, but how do you keep chesed from another person? It's by preventing him from doing an act of kindness towards you. You're actually keeping chesed from him. And Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Omer, he looks at the rest of the pasuk in Iyov. Af porek menu yirat shamayim. What you do is you end up removing the yoke of the of fear of heaven from the Talmud. Shenemar v'yirat shaddai tazov. The second half of the pasuk is, and then you leave the fear of God. In other words, by not allowing your student to relate to you with subservience and to serve you that way, not only are you keeping him from doing an act of chesed, but in addition, he does not then gain that sense of reverence that he then transfers, as it were, to his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which, of course, is a staple within the way that we associate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is through the way we relate to our parents and to our rabbeim and to other people in positions of reverence, etc. Go back to our halachic discussion. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Amana shetafsa metaltalim zonoteha. Let's say have an almana, and she's not being fed. So she goes to the estate, and she grabs some metaltalin in order to sell them, and then get money for food. Ma shetafsa tafsa. So Rabbi Elazar says, the tfisa is good, we don't take it away from her. Tanya lameachu, a brayta that supports that. Amana shetafsa metaltalim zonoteha, ma shetafsa tafsa. Good, same thing. V'chein ki'ata Rav Dimi amar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, Ma'aseh b'chalato shel Rabbi Shabtai. Rabbi Shabtai in Eretz Yisrael, his daughter-in-law, evidently his son had died, his daughter-in-law was now a widow, shtafsa diskia meleya me'ot. She grabbed a bucket full of money, or a purse full of money, in for mezonot, v'lo haya koach b'yad chachamim lehotzi miyada. And there was no legal recourse for the chachamim to take it away from her because she had been tofes lemezonot. Now, Amar Ravina, V'lamran el mizoni. Ravina says this is only true about mizonot. Aval liktubah, but if she seizes money for payment of the ktubah, and this is metaltalin, mafkina mina, we take it away from her because, of course, metaltalim are not mishtabe liktubah. Matkif l'amar bravashi, so Amar Bravashi challenges Ravina. Ma'ishtal liktubah, why are you not allowing her to collect it for the ktubah? Because the mimikarki v'lamitaltali, because a ktubah is only attached to karka. Mizonot not mimikarki v'lamitaltali. Mizonot are also only attached to karka. Remember, until the times of the Gonim, there is no attachment to mitaltalin, except according to Reb Meir. So he says, why make the distinction? Ella lemezoni ma'ida tafsa tafsa. But what's the ruling? That even though the attachment and her legal claim in court is only on karka, if they're not paying her, she can be tofes metaltalin. She then, of course, will have to take an oath to the fact that she of how much she has collected, so she won't overcollect. And therefore, achanami l'ktuba. So therefore, you can't distinguish. Same ruling for ktuba. However, you will see our mother of Yitzchak bar Naftali Ravina, hachemina mishmei de Rava kavatech. But a student told Ravina that I heard in the name of Rava that supported you that it's only for mezonot and not for ktubah. Now, Amar Yochan Mishmei de Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra. Next piece. Almana sheshata shtayim v'shalosh shanim v'lo tav'a mezonot. Let's say I have an almana who is on the estate for 2 or 3 years. We'll see why we pick 2 or 3. And she never requested mezonot, or at least for 2 or 3 years she stopped requesting mezonot. Ibda mezonot. She's lost her claim to mezonot. Now, we'll see what that means. Hashta shtayim ibda shalosh mibay. The first question we have is about the language. Why are you saying 2 or 3 years? If, after all, after 2 years she loses it, you don't have to mention 3 years. So, lokasha kan ba'niya kan ba'shira. In the case of a poor woman, after 2 years, she's not somebody who can support herself. She doesn't have other means. So, obviously, she's found some other vehicle. She's lost it. 3 years could be referring to a wealthy woman who does have more resources, and maybe they ran out. Inami, another distinction we can make is kan meprutza, kan metznua, a woman who's brasher or a woman who's more timid, so we may say 2 or 3 years. Fine. But either way, she loses mizonot. Rava comes and puts a caveat, amarava lomran elamafreya. That just means suing for back pay for mizonot. That she's lost. If you go and spend money for a few months on mizonot and turn around and present the bills, they pay you. 2 or 3 years, that's already too long. But certainly Rava says, in any case, maybe she had some outside source of funding for 3, 5, 6 years, and that's dried up. Now she can certainly claim mizonot from here on in. She just cannot claim back pay. By Rabbi Yochanan, Yitomim omrim natanu, v'hiomeret lo natalti. Let's say that the heirs say, we gave her food. And she says, I never got it. Amila viraya. Who has the burden of proof that we would then say that the other party is now at fault? In other words, do we start with the assumption if the almana says I never got fed, that's what we assume to be true, they have to feed her unless they can prove they did, or vice versa? And it depends on the following question. Nichse b'chezkat yatme kaimi, do we say that the estate is essentially muchzak by the yatomim, which means that she has to prove that she is owed money? Or perhaps because she has a claim on all of the nechasim for mezonot, maybe she's the muhzeket, and the heirs have to bring proof that they did pay her. Toshma, let's see if we can solve it. It's very simple. Levi says that as long as the almanah is not married, the yatomim have to bring proof, which means she is considered the muhzeket. Niseit ala la viraya. Once she marries, and then she wants to sue for back pay or for the ktubah, that she has to bring the proof that she didn't get it. But as long as she's on the estate, she's the muhzeket. That seems to solve it. Amrav Shim Barashi Ketanoi. He says, no, it's a machloka tanaim. Mocheret v'kotevet elu l'mizonot macharti v'elu l'ktubah macharti. It's Rabbi Yehuda. We have a braita, which is riffing off of a later Mishnah. It says that when a woman sells property, an almanah sells property for collection, she writes in the shtar, this I'm selling for mezonot, and the other one, this I'm selling for ketubah. Tivur Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi omer mocheret v'kotevet stam. He says, no, she writes it stam, I'm selling it, and she doesn't put a stipulation. V'chein kocha yafeh, and that actually bolsters her, gives her more flexibility later on in court because she isn't tied down to anything. We'll see what that means later on. So my love, Bahakami Palgi, don't we think that the machloket is as follows? Between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Yehuda says you have to write specifically what is being sold for. Rabbi Yehuda damar boy lifrushi sovar nichse becheskit yatmi kaimi. That Rabbi Yehuda, who says you have to write the specific thing, says the nechosim are becheskit yatmi, they're muhzak by the yorshim, v'almanala viraya, and therefore she has to bring a proof, and therefore she'll have to substantiate and say, they did not pay me mezonot, and I have evidence of it, and that's why I sold this for mezonot. They did not pay the ktubah, etc. That's why she has to stipulate. Rabbi Yossi savar lo boi lifrush. Rabbi Yossi says she does not have to explicitly write what they were sold for. Nichse b'chezket almanah kaimi, believes that she's the muhzeket. V'alei tomim lo viraya, and they have to bring a raya that she didn't get paid. That's what we think. Mimai, who says so? Tomim de kuliyama nichse b'chezket almanah kaimi. Version 1 of the response is, maybe everybody agrees that the nechasim are muhzak by the almanat. And the heirs always have to bring a proof, which means who is not clear here is Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say she has to write specifically what she sold it for? The answer is he doesn't say she has to write. He says kotevet, she writes. Rabbi Yehuda etzatova kamashmalan. Rabbi Yehuda is just giving her good advice. Lo likra la rav tanuta, so they won't say she's a chazer. If she just writes, I sold this for $10,000 for my rights, they'll come and claim, you're eating $10,000 worth of food? What kind of, I mean, obviously they're not claiming that she's eating that much, she's squirreling it away, whatever. They say, as he says, he's giving her good advice, write what you're collecting for. This part is partial ktuba, this for mezonot, is for mezonot, right? And we have to accept that Eitzatova, di lote mahachi, if you don't accept the notion of Eitzatova, hadabai Rabbi Yochanan, tifshot le matnitin, Rabbi Yochanan's question, which is, who has to bring the ra'aya? The question that we had at the beginning of this sugya, at the very bottom of Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph, which is, who has to bring the ra'aya? We should be able to solve that question from the next Mishnah. Mocheret lemezonot shelo bevetin. A woman, it's a two Mishnah later, a woman can sell, an almana can sell for mezonot, not in the presence of beitin. V'chotevet el mezonot b'charti. And she writes in the Shtarchov, I sold this for mezonot. Which would seem to support the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and would seem to support the notion, it accords with Rabbi Yehuda, and according to what our original theory was, that seems to support the idea that the Yitomim are Muhzak, and she has to bring the Ra'aya. Ela matnitin leikam l'ishtamina, so why can't we use the Mishnah to solve Rabbi Yochanan's question? The Eitzatova kamashplan, because the Mishnah is only giving her an Eitzatova, which is, right, that you took it from his own notes, so nobody will have any claims against you, but you don't have to. Hachinami Eitzatova kamashplan, so same thing that Rabbi Yehuda, the same exact thing, he's giving her good advice that you should write the mezonot so that nobody will have claims against you, but not that you need to. So that's version one. Version one of solving it is, everybody agrees that the nechasim are b'chezkat almana, and the yatomim have to bring a raya, and those opinions, and that stam mishnah that says she should write l'mzonot, are just giving her good advice. Inami, we can go in the opposite direction. The chuli alma nechse b'chezkat yatme kaimi. Everybody agrees that the nechasim are muhzak by the heirs. V'hainu time to Rabbi Yossi, so now who's behind the eight ball? Why does Rabbi Yossi say she does not have to stipulate and does not have to write explicitly what she sold for, which is for mezonot, which is for ktubah? Kedabaya kashisha. He's relying on a statement that later shows up in the old Abaye, somebody that we, uh, that we will hear from again. We heard from already. De Amar Abaye Kashisha, Mashal Rabbi Yossi Lama Davar Domeh. What is Rabbi Yossi's halacha like? The shchiv mira. It's like a shchiv mira, a guy who's on his deathbed. Shamar tnuma time zuz leploni baal chovi. Now, a person on his deathbed can dispose of his assets however he wants to, like anybody else, and we are far more lenient in what he needs to formalize the kinyan in order to make it easier for him to not be worried about such things. That's sugya, basically in the ninth parak of Batra, but it shows up all over. So a shchiv mira who says, "Give 200 zuz to Ploni, to whom I owe money, bal chovi." He's not saying give it as the debt, but he's identifying him as Baal Chovi. Ratza b'chovo notlan, ratza b'matana notlan. Ploni can collect it either as payment for the debt or as a matana. Now, why is his imatana notlan lokach yafek kocho? In other words, he can take it as either, and it strengthens him. Just the exact wording that Rabbi Yossi used. Avekach kocha yafeh, that gives her strength, or gives her more power. What more power does he have here? If the Baal Chov accepts it as a matana, then he can then sue the estate for another 200 that he didn't get paid. On the other hand, if somebody comes and seizes that property, he can't get it back because the matana postdates whatever earlier obligation there was. If, on the other hand, he collects it as a debt, then he has no more claim on the property, but nobody will be able to seize it from him because any later claimant will be later than him and won't be able to seize it. So he has the flexibility to choose either way. So the same way Rabbi Yossi says, she writes Stam, and that gives her flexibility later to assign it to Ketubah or Mizonot. But that doesn't mean that she's the Muchzeket. So now, that at the end, we haven't solved the problem of who has to bring the proof, because we could argue either way, but the one thing we're not going to do is say it's the Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. That's not what's happening. Now, Ketzad Mocheret, how does she sell the property? What does she do? She estimates what her food bill will be for 12 months, and she goes and sells property once a year, meaning that we don't want her to be selling off property too frequently, because that's going to put a bad name on the estate, and it's going to make things more difficult for everybody. And the deal she makes is the guy she sells it to gives her a check every month for her food. Rav Yehuda Amar, Rav Yehuda disagrees and says, Mocher l'shisha chodashim. She sells every 6 months, not every year. Keach v'hanes achat l'shloshim yom. And he pays her every 30 days again. Tanya kavted Rav Huna, Mocher l'shem asachodash, l'keach v'hanes achat l'shloshim yom. We have a braita that supports Rav Huna, sell every 12 months. Tanya kavted Rav Yehuda, we have a braita that supports Rav Yehuda, Mocheret l'shisha chodashim, l'keach v'hanes achat l'shloshim yom. So Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, the great Amoraim of the second generation, are each adopting a braita that supports that upon the position in which they build. Now, Amar Meimar. Amar says the following. Hilchata mocheret l'shisha chodashim. The halacha follows Rav Yehuda, 6 months. V'lokeach v'fanes achat l'shloshim yom. Again, he pays every month. He gives her money for food. And Amar Ravashi la Meimar. So Ravashi turned to Meimar and said, you're ruling like that. The Rav Huna Mai. What about Rav Huna, who said once a year? Amar le lo shmi'ali. Rav Meimar says, I didn't hear it. What does that lo shmi'ali in a Meimar's wording? Klamar lo sfirali, meaning I'm aware of it, I don't buy it, and I don't accept it. So the halacha is every 6 months. Bo minei mirav sheshet. So they asked Rav Sheshet the question. Mocher le mizonot, mahu shetachzor titrof liktuva. Very interesting question. A woman who sells property for mizonot. Alright, so a woman, an almana, sold property to A. And then it's time to collect the ketubah, and there's no property left, which means she has a right to go collect from Meshu'abadim, because she has an earlier claim going back to the date of her marriage. Can she go back and now seize this property and force him to come back to the heirs and try to collect the sale price? Which, of course, it looks like double dipping, but from a particular perspective, it makes sense. The first time she's selling it simply to get Mizonot, the person bought it, and now she can come back and claim it as an earlier lien holder. And the question is, can we buy a little bit of Rav Yosef? They're simply asking about the halacha of Rav Yosef, how far it goes. De'am Rav Yosef, ar malta dezovin achrayut ayatmi, uvedina dezovin achrayut ayatmi. If an almana sells, the achrayut comes back to the heirs. And if the Beit Din sells on behalf of the almana, the achrayut comes back to the heirs. Now, the question is, how far does that achrayut go? My. Since the achrayut goes back on the tomim, she can seize it. Odilma Amrila, perhaps the heirs can say, Dumamatsi Amrila, Nehida Achriuta Amalo Kabilat Alavach. Yes, you, the Almana, when you sold it, you did not accept Achrayut for some outsider coming and taking the property when you sold it to the guy. Achrayut anafshech min lo kvilat ala, but you certainly should have accepted Achrayut of your own claim when you sold it. That you should have certainly foregone. So Amrale, so what's the answer? Tenitua mocheret volechet ad kdei ktubata. So we have a halacha that when she needs mizunot, she can sell up until the amount of the ktubah. Meaning, if there's $100,000 left in the property of land, and she needs 50,000, her ktubah is 50,000, she can sell up to 50,000, for mizunot, and that's it, and the rest is her ktubah. Samachla, shetigbe ktubata min ashar, and then she relies on the rest for the ktubah. So shma mina shaira in lo shaira lo. So obviously it means only if there's left over for the ktubah could she claim it. Not if there isn't. She can't go back and claim it from the people she sold it to. V'doma eitza tova kamash malan. Maybe that's another example of just giving good advice. The lo likri la hadranita, that she shouldn't be called a reneger, somebody who sells and then takes it back, but maybe legally she can. So maybe it's just giving her good advice. Don't sell beyond the amount of the ktubah. So imken litni govak tuvata min ashar. Then it should have just said she does collect from the rest. My samachla. Why does it say she relies on the rest? In other words, that's as far as she can go. Shma mina shaira in lo shaira lo. So therefore, we conclude that it's only if she left something over that she can sell mizonot. She cannot sell from mizonot until the point which she's going to then have to reclaim that property for her ktubah. So that's our solution. Ibai Elohu. Another question. Zavin v'lo yitzturicho lezuze. A side question. What if a person sells property, and by the time they actually sell the property, which nobody ever does unless they need cash, the need for cash has gone away. Can they turn around and say, my need for cash has gone away, I'd like to go back on the deal? It sounds like a strange question. Hadrizvini or lo hadrizvini? Can the deal be reversed? Toshma. Now, obviously, nobody's going to lose money, but can the seller back out of the deal? There was a fellow who sold land to Rapapa. The guy needed cash in order to buy oxen, ostensibly to plow his field. At the end, he didn't need the money. Rapapa gave the land back and allowed the deal to be reverted. So the answer is Rapapa, that doesn't prove anything. Maybe Rapapa was being an extra nice guy. Maybe he didn't have to do it. And maybe once a deal is made, that's it. So let's see. Toshma. There was a famine in Nahardea. Famine in Nahardea does not necessarily refer to rain as much as to a lack of access to wheat or to food. Zavninu kuliyama la padnayu. So everybody was selling their houses in order to be able to get food. Lasof atuchiti. And then at the end, the boat showed up on the Tigris and unloaded with lots of wheat. Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman said, Dinahu dehadriya padin lemarayu. He said, Mi'ikar ad-din, the essential law, would allow these people to get their houses back and refund the money. So that seems to say that if you sell and you don't need the money, that it turns out you don't need the money, you can take it back. So hatam nami zvini v'ta'u tavu. No, that's a different case, because in that case, the sale was errant. It was based on a mistake. De'igloi milta da'arba ba'kule ha'vikayma. It turned out that the boat the whole time had been blocked up and was right around the corner with all the wheat. People didn't have it. People panicked for the wrong reason. They didn't need to sell at all. And their sale was clearly based on the idea that there was no food. And the food was right around the corner. So it was all a mistake. So, now we understand why the student said to Rav Nachman, who ruled that they could sell it back, they could get it back. He said to Rav Nachman, you know, if you do this, you're going to cause trouble down the line, meaning that down the line, people are not going to want to sell property, buy property, because they'll think, oh, Rav Nachman's going to turn around and rule that the sale is invalid. Why should I get involved? And you're going to destroy the real estate market. So that's why now we understand why he said it. It was within the context of that story. Again, we had like a fragment of a statement, and we don't know what story to attach it to, and now we understand. So Amarle, what was the answer? Atuko Rav Nachman, Atuko Yoma Batsarta Shricha. What is there? Famine so often? Such a thing could happen. It's a once in a lifetime occurrence. So Amar Le'in, but Tzarta Benardea, Mishchash Chicha. So Rami Rashuel said back to Rav Nachman, you don't live in Nardea, you don't know, but this happens in Nardea quite often, and you're going to destroy the housing market here because nobody's going to be willing to buy property knowing that if it turns out that the famine is relieved by some means, that you're going to allow them to get their houses back. Now, v'hilchata, what's the halacha? Zovin v'loitz tericho le'zuzi hadres v'nei. Nonetheless, if you sell, and by the time you sell, it turns out the cash you needed is no longer needed, then you can ask for the deal to be reversed, and indeed to get your property back. Okay, we have Baruch Hashem gotten up to the end of the, of this sugya, and we will pick up in the next podcast, and the Mishnah and Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph, Amana Bain Min Ha'irusin, sorry, Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, Amana Bain Min Ha'irusin, Bain Min Hanisuin.